Next session, we're going to open with Mark Allen, who's going to talk about the steel journey to net zero.
Morning. How are we doing? Everybody got the coffee? Everybody awake again? I'm going to give a bit of a bird's eye view of transition and disruption in the steel industry. I was just saying to some people this, at coffee break, I did a talk on this around hydrogen about a year or two ago, mainly to a steel audience, and I've had to rewrite the whole thing in the last couple of years, in the last few weeks really, just based on the churn and the development and the dynamic situation that is actually sort of acting upon what's really quite a traditionally slow-moving, conservative industry. And steelmaking has kind of, in the UK, sort of stagnated into one pattern for the last generation for all sorts of reasons. But Materials Processing Institute, first of all, a little bit, who are we? Who are you and why are you here? This is a bit about kind of who we are in terms of values and the way that we try and plug into innovation and supporting innovation in processes, innovation in technology. For the UK and globally, there's been innovation in steelmaking on our site since the 1950s. MPI itself has existed as an independent innovation and technology development partner since for about the last 10 years. Principally working with iron and steel industry and the rest of the metal sector, but there's increasingly more overlap with sort of relevant neighbouring industries, ceramics, glass, building products, and also other sort of alternative fuel providers and so on. So that's what we do. We are up there on Teesside. You've actually seen us once this morning already. If you're looking carefully in the background of the picture of Hartlepool Nuclear Power Station, just across the river, if you stand on Hartlepool Nuclear Power Station, you can see our site from there. But I like, when talking to a sort of a hydrogen and CCUS, etc. audience, that's the one audience where you say, oh, we're from Teesside, and people are like, oh, well done you, that's good. We were on the news for all sorts of other things last night, watching reports on deprivation and crime levels, and that, I'm not going to get too political, but you know, there is that social thing. What happens when you pull out, like where Teesworks is now? 10 years ago, that was the steelworks closing down and decimating a community. So there is that human bit of the journey around what you do, and how you keep innovating and you keep some passion and belief in what you can do in an area to regenerate and create. I want to be creating good green jobs of the future, and it's some sustainable, in all every sense of the word, industries that people can actually be working in and be proud to be part of. So the institute itself, there's a picture of our site. We have, at the front end, we have shiny labs. We have basically a sort of top flight university level sets of laboratories, microscopy, XRD, TGA, all that kind of good stuff at the front. About halfway back behind that, we have a pilot steelworks, so about sort of three or four times the size of this room. So we have a 7-ton, which is quite small, electric arc furnace, steel casting lines, various other hot and dirty pilot equipment in there. And then just behind that, we have a hydrogen mini grid, which we stuck in a couple of years ago to support our transitions into demonstrating new fuels and particularly the steel and metal uses of hydrogen, whether that is in heating or in direct iron making. So we have, and then various other sort of pilot equipment based on site to help us be that transitional partner once the technology readiness levels have got up sort of 3 or 4 and you're ready to actually scale up and have a safe space and expert assistance to get the technology commercialized, basically get it working. So in terms of connectivity, we're part of bodies like UK Metals, UK Steel, NEPIC, cluster around Teesside, but also sort of national partnerships like Transfire and FISC, Foundation Industry Sustainability Consortium, which is us So working in partnership and conversation with Glass Futures, Lucidian, with CPI, with the Henry Royce Institute as well, to coordinate what we do to accelerate and improve the support for foundation industries transforming into what they need to be for the future. The Institute itself, we focus on the industrial pillars you'd expect us to: materials development, circularity, decarbonisation, and the digital transformation, whether that is in sort of measurement or it's actually the application of AI to accelerating sort of process change and so on. So that's what kind of gives us the bird's eye view, and the reason this is going to be quite a sort of interconnected, wide perspective talk that I'll go through this morning. My own job role presently is as lead on the Green Steel Centre, and really trying to pull together and focus what we do to accelerate the transition to greener steelmaking. Reasons being somewhere between sort of 7-9% of the national CO2 emissions are today are down to steelmaking. Now that's going to change quite quickly because of decisions and changes announced by the big steelmakers. I'll get onto that in a minute though. But there is transition and disruption, and I wanted to talk about both, because you get UK Metals, for example, a 2030 strategy vision, a little bit looking, you know, everybody's got one of these nice ordered kind of plans and timelines and so on. As we all know, it doesn't actually happen in that kind of order. It's much more like trying to create an ecosystem and see different things sprouting up, and some things come up and die, and some things remove and retain. But to look at, you know, from a, if you're an existing asset owner and you've got an existing established business producing the stuff that people need, you want to see what's a transition, what is a plan that's not going to be just completely random and disrupting and kind of give you headaches all the time. So we work in that sort of top half of that circle there: innovation and R&D, circularity and demonstration, and skills training and building up the knowledge base. So that's part of the pattern, and very similar for the steel sector to the rest of us, the kind of the pathways and things you'd expect to see. But if you look on a sort of a spectrum from transition to disruption, there's these items and more that sit on it along the line from sort of, and I'm not going to talk about all 7 or 8 of them. I'm going to pick out on a few of them particularly, but ranging from the education and the skills transition through to stuff like AI, hydrogen, and I'm going to throw cement in there. You'll find out why in a minute. So steel grades, somewhere between transition and disruption is the need for a change in what you're actually making, what you're supplying into the market. And the volumes, I'll echo what one of the earlier speakers said on using a bit less. It was Karen, wasn't it, from Heidelberg? Use less. We shouldn't, you know, like, why would you be telling people to use less? But that's obviously your first step in the decarbonisation stuff. And at this point, you may notice the little, the reason for being here along the top of the slide, that graphic that sort of illustrates the Industrial Revolution's impact on global average heat and global average temperatures, and that unknown to the far end of the slide, and that's what we're here to try and stop that turning darker and darker red. We're here to decelerate and reverse the amount of global warming gases that we're putting up into the atmosphere. So every little bit helps. The transitional stuff, the disruption stuff, is part of that picture. So yeah, using less material and the higher performance, changing some of the structural steels, more efficient electrical steels, and this kind of innovation is happening across the world. But the point three is quite important. We are about to see the bulk of the UK steel sector moving from making their own steel from iron ore and coal to melting scrap and making steel grades from that. And there's a whole load of different challenges around that, around the kind of steel grades you can make. You can make pretty much all of it through scrap metal if you do it right. But the more you recycle scrap, the volume of scrap, you know, availability builds up as an industry, as an economy matures. But even China is putting in more and more arc furnaces. They, you know, even where they are in the development cycle, they're generating a lot more scrap. And you do get elements like copper, particularly, which build up in the background levels, which are very hard to separate out from the iron. And you have to start thinking about being a bit more canny around how you're mixing steels to make the right grades. And there is there's a significant sort of body of work around how you're going to have to keep putting in some virgin iron units made from iron ore, made by greener processes, electrical and hydrogen iron processes, into the scrap melters as well, going forward to keep the purity levels and make the high performance grades you need. So there's a lot of balancing there, and a massive upscaling that we're going to have to see from the steelworks around the use of domestic scrap risings and scrap imports. There's going to be a battle across Europe for scrap metal, no doubt about it. Having said that, the largest metal recycler in the country right now, it was a few years ago, Selsa Steel in Cardiff, where they were the largest, the UK's largest recycler was part of their sort of tagline, due to, you know, they make a million plus tons of steel rebar and stuff a year. Currently, the largest users of scrap metal in the country are the blast furnace and the basic oxygen furnace in South Wales, in Port Talbot, because they're also recycling huge volumes of scrap through that. And that's a story that doesn't, you know, that doesn't even register on the bigger picture announcements about where they're heading. That's quite interesting. And also producers of significant volumes, hundreds of thousands plus tons of blast furnace slag, which was also mentioned earlier, which is a significant cement precursor, or cement kind of extra cementing agent going in there. So you lose the current sort of energy balance, the current mixture of what happens with iron ore and coke and limestone and stuff to make steel. And you get a whole load of other knock-on effects. You lose a large... If you move that over to electrification, you get a massive CO2 bounce for the nation, for the geographical footprint of the nation. But you also have got other knock-on things. So you're not producing cements for slags for cement at the same levels that you were. The requirements for the impact on the electric grid is massive, steelworks themselves are actually an integrated steelworks is actually quite an efficient user of its power. It reuses all the off gas from making coke, gets reburnt through furnaces. It powers itself. So if you then have to stop powering everything you do from buying coal, which yes is definitely a good idea in the big picture, but then you have got gigawatts and gigawatts worth of power have then got to be found from somewhere to replace the energy levels you need to do that. So that levels of disruption for the rest of us is not to be ignored. So electricity, one of the main transitions across Europe, and I was at the European Electrical Steelmaking conference in Germany last week. And suddenly everybody and their dog is going electric, to some extent putting in electric arc furnaces for melting scrap. Increased interest in the efficiencies depending on your national energy pricing and stuff, the efficiency versus the cost of using electricity directly for heating metal. And for metals, it's not quite as sensitive as ceramics to radiant heat. Radiant heat is fine, but you can also use inductive heating, which is a very efficient way of transferring energy into a block of metal. So that kind of stuff is transitioning. But the melting side of this, melting the steel, getting it down to liquid metal so you can cast it into new slabs, new shapes, new rolls, etc. I've got three new megaton-sized electric furnaces announced. One in Wales, one in Scunthorpe, and one in Middlesbrough. Oh, yeah, Redcar. announced in planning or expected during the next few years, and that transition has a big impact on people's and the number of workforce you need to run it as well, but it also has a massive impact on infrastructure requirements, on carbon emissions, and generally on what's going to happen to, you know, the availability of material to put into those furnaces, right? The last point there, a little bit of a disruptor, a little bit of sort of new entry there, is electrochemical iron making. The second largest steel making sort of conglomerate in the world, which is ArcelorMittal, are going to build an electrically powered open bath iron smelter on their steelworks in Belgium. And they're expecting to start breaking ground on that this year, which is taking technology from ferroalloy production. So existing technology, but it's got to be scaled up by 10 times to actually make 1, 2, 3 million tons of hot metal, which is jargon for molten iron, per year to run the steelworks through. And that's electrodes for heating, but also a little bit of electrochemical energy going in there, and carbons for smelting and reducing iron ore down to iron metal. But there's also direct electrolysis tech up and coming, but still sort of mid-TRL, still not at sort of full commercial level. So Boston Metal is probably the best known example of that. But their reactor is about the size of this stage. So it's not ready to jump in and overtake coal quite yet in terms of producing iron. The technology that is sat there and ready is hydrogen. So if you follow sort of green steel, so if you Google green steel, you'll almost certainly be directed to projects in Sweden, Finland, Norway, because they are the world leaders on hydrogen, fossil-free steel, hydrogen produced with hydroelectric electrons, high-quality iron ore. They have the perfect situation there to start using hydrogen for direct iron reduction. It's direct because you get the solid iron ore particles, and you react that in a stream of gas, and it metallizes, it turns into solid metal. It doesn't melt, it just turns into a solid sort of sponge iron metal, and then you have to melt that in various furnaces, like electric arc furnaces. The furnace types will evolve a little bit over time. I haven't got time to go into all that. But that is the third use of hydrogen. So one of the speakers yesterday said there's two things you can do with hydrogen. You can put it in fuel cells, so you need it super pure. You can combust it, so you can get away with it not being quite so many zeros of purity. The third massive use, and I think from a strategic point of view, one of the main contenders, I think, for prioritization over the next decade for being first in the queue for hydrogen has got to be iron making, iron reduction, using hydrogen that's as low carbon as possible. Right now, those processes work on natural gas, and the manufacturers have converted most of their furnaces to be hydrogen ready. Like everything else, getting hydrogen ready, you need the hydrogen to make it. And that's kind of the current sort of mood music around the European steel industry is, yeah, we're hydrogen ready, but the hydrogen ain't ready. We are. It's kind of waiting for the volumes of that to come up, those massive gas pipeline projects in Germany, the kind of supply projects and stuff we've got here. You need 3, depending on how much iron you're trying to make, you need about 3 or 4 gigawatts worth of electricity to get enough to make enough hydrogen to replace what you're making in Scunthorpe right now, or what you're making in South Wales right now with piles of coal. It's not a small amount. It's not something you can just plug into. Tata Steel announced they'd signed a deal with the National Grid down there to do a massive beefing up of the grid, because they're right on the end of the network, to do a massive sort of grid improvements for their electrical melting. If they were going to go for hydrogen making to produce iron there as well, you'd be looking at double that extra capacity. So there's hydrogen as a disruptor, because you can make it wherever you want. I know it's cheaper to make it in different places. 2 minutes. you've got, because you can make it wherever you want to, this is one of the places where there's likely to be disruption. People will start, the iron ore suppliers will start making their own iron metal from green hydrogen and supplying that. They become iron suppliers, not iron ore suppliers. That's a massive change. The steel makers, fewer and fewer will be making their own iron, I think, and more of their suppliers will be supplying iron to them. One thing I wanted to talk about as the final disruptor is cement, because we have been working with Cambridge University, and we've been getting a lot of press coverage recently on the electric cement. It's called Cambridge Electric Cement, but an electric cement process where you take recycled cement paste, which again was mentioned earlier, you stick that into the arc furnace instead of limestone to act as a cleaning agent for your steel, and the slag you get on top, rather than being a low-grade aggregate, is virtually identical to Portland cement when it comes off again, providing you treat it right. They've done the science on it. It was papers in Nature last month. We've done the technology, we've done the steel making, proved it works in our steel furnace, and we've now moved that whole trial to Celsa Steel in South Wales, where we're doing full-scale commercial demos of it this year, and then looking for scale-up partners really to spin out and to get some licensing models to kick that process off. It's not quite going to probably pick up volume in time to make up for the loss of granulated blast furnace slag quite quickly enough, but it does have the potential to be a huge game changer for us all. So there you go, transition, disruption, all those kind of items there, and the timelines on it. It started already. It started across Northern Europe already, and it's picking up pace. People are moving to hydrogen in Saudi and in Kuwait Steel as well. It's picking up pace. There's some likely timelines sort of going through that. Between now and 2030, it's no longer a kind of, oh, if only steel could go green, it's such a big challenge. It is happening. We've always been the largest recycling industry in history. We still are. And I think that we do have a potential to go proper sustainable if we actually work with partners here to do it. It's doable, a massive challenge, and doable. I'd buy shares in a scrap dealer if I were you. That's it. Thank you. And ask me later.